Listening Dog Media. Ruckit with Kieran Bracken and Nick Easter. The rugby podcast that doesn't take itself too seriously.
Hello, welcome to Ruckit. This week we're going to be talking to some of the UK's biggest sports stars regarding their own mental health battles. It is Mental Health Awareness Week. I think it's very important that everyone talks. Today we're going to be talking to Dean Windass, Hull City legend, about his own mental health struggles during Mental Health Awareness Week.
Oh, listen, thanks for coming on Ruckit, Let's Talk. It's brilliant to have you on, and I'm so excited to have you on, basically because the first thing I want to ask you and talk about is your singing this morning. I mean, what a great motivation video. But I thought, listen, I clicked on it and I thought, go on, have a good voice. Go on, have a good voice. And I was like, nah, he ain't got a great voice. But it really cheered me up.
To be fair, I'm better on the karaoke when I'm sensible.
I love it, you know. And it's really interesting because I didn't even know we were going to have this chat. But for I guess the last year, you keep popping up on these walks, and I do love listening to it. I mean, just so you know, I struggle with my mental health while I was playing. I'd love to get your history on it. And, you know, my overall feeling really the whole time and still is now is one of huge embarrassment. I get very embarrassed when people talk about it. And certainly when I was playing, no one knew about it. And I'm just intrigued as to, firstly, you know, were you struggling when you were playing? And then secondly, you know, why is it that you sort of, you've come out, you're actually celebrating it and saying, you know, small little steps and helping people. So how do you overcome that embarrassment? So two questions. When did it start for you and where did you get the courage from?
Well, I was like you when I was a footballer, 20 years I played for, and I was like you. I was like the joker in the pack of every change room that I went in, and it was a massive smoke screen, yeah, in a sense. My problem started when I was 12, when my parents got divorced. It's gone now, and it's a situation where I found it very, very difficult. Obviously, I've got a brother called Lee who's 6 years older than me, so he would have been 18 at the time, so... It was a situation where he was working, he had a girlfriend, he was going to his girlfriend's, and my mum was working nights at a Bird's Eye factory in Hull. And it was a situation where I was basically, majority of my time, apart from being at school, on my own.
Right.
And trying to look after my mum, obviously. My dad was like sort of my, like everybody's parents, in the sense that my dad was a goalkeeper, but a very poor one. To be quite honest with you.
That's why he got so good at striking, was he thought, I must be a striker. He kept letting them in.
Can't be a fucking goalkeeper, can you? You got me down. But no, it was a situation where it was an amateur goalkeeper, and I looked up to him. Yeah. You know, he was my hero, really. And he gave me some great advice along the way, which I know now, excuse me, as a 52-year-old man, that you look back and you go, he was right then. And he's right now, and he's this and then. So it was, as you say, 12-year-old, and then, you know, I found that I was peeing the bed, you know, right up to the age of 17, yeah. I think it was. And the situation was like, what's going on? Why am I not waking up? Why am I, you know, doing this? And that was an embarrassment in itself.
Wow. Really.
You know, putting the sheets in the washing machine before my mum come home from work and doing all shitty things like that, really. And then, as you say, when you get on with life, and it was always a little, you know, always as you get older and then you start drinking. I got released at the age of 18 as a footballer, so I didn't sign pro till just before my 21st birthday. So basically, I was working in a factory, I was working on a building site. I was just like a normal lad working for a living, going for a pint after work, like you do Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays. It came to a situation where every time I was drunk, I was getting angry. I was punching walls, you know, being in the bed. It was just really, really weird. And I was sort of, like you, probably just embarrassed to come out and say, look, you know, at the time, Kieran, I actually didn't think I had a problem. I actually thought I'm fed up because my mum and dad are broke. You know what I mean?
But you never, I guess you never had someone to talk to, and you wouldn't, you'd be too embarrassed to speak to a doctor. You'd be too embarrassed to tell your mate. So you suffered in silence for how long? So you know, you had a great professional career. So how much did your mental health affect your sport and you personally? Once you've got, you sign your contract, you're 21, you're not drinking as much, but you still have a crack and have a few drinks and stuff. So where, at what stage does it, did it become a problem, or was it a problem? Or you just live with it?
I live with it. And it was always in the back of my mind, you know, that I was, you know, as you say, listen, I was very lucky because I'd seen my dad on a weekend, he'd take me to football and this, that, and another from 12 right up to sort of 17, 18 when I obviously got my own car or whatever. But it was a situation when I was a professional footballer is that, like you say, you don't go out 48 hours before a game and you do all the right things and that. But even when I was having a drink after a game, because I always go for a beer, you know, a release valve, because you train hard all week and then play a game on a Saturday, win, lose, or draw. You know, you get married, you have a kid, and this, that, and the other, and it was still, you know, still getting angry, I was still punching walls. I was listening to Elvis songs, you know, every song that my mum and dad used to listen to when I was a kid. Yeah. Brought back really good memories at the time, but then obviously bad memories, because it reminded me of them when they were together. And then when obviously, you know, when you're getting older. And so then you sort of block it out, really, in a sense that when you, listen, like, you know, when you cross that white line, you know, nobody can touch you. You don't have to think about anything else. Is obviously your performance, winning a game of rugby or football, whatever you're doing. But then afterwards, you say, for example, after training, I'd get in the car and put the music on. I love like 70s, 80s music, and I'd just be fucking in floods of tears and thinking, what's going on? Why
am I mad?
No, what it is, the question was, you're looking in the mirror, why am I still feeling like this?
You've got a world at your feet, you're scoring goals, you've got adulation, you're a legend, everyone's singing your name on the touchlines, and your world could be better. But do you know what? It's really weird, isn't it? People say when I talked about my mental health while I was playing for England and really struggled before the World Cup, but then when we won it in 2003. But people just, you know, we put on a front. You put on a front, don't you? You know, you pretend everything's all right. And a lot of people said to me, God, I never knew. I mean, you really hid it really well, which is a problem, certainly men. But I guess you hid it really well for a long, long time.
I did, because at the end of the day, but then it becomes a problem, because I've always been a confident kid. I've always been that confident lad. I always had good friends in the playground. I was always the one who took the ball in the playground and I'd pick the team. And you know, so always that sort of, it's all about Dino. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? All this, all that, you know, even at a young age. So I always craved attention.
Yeah.
I always craved attention. And if I didn't get that attention, I felt vulnerable.
Right. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I'm not shy to say that now. Whenever, like you say, and you know more than anything else, you go to a teammate and go, I'm fed up, I'm depressed, I feel as though I want to commit suicide and that, they just fucking laugh you in your face. I wouldn't have had the bollocks to say it anyway, to be fair. I wouldn't have done, and probably, but the trouble is, like, I was one of them because I was so popular with every football club or every lads I was around. Some days I'd go in and we'd do, say, like the old-fashioned warm-ups, and you jog around the pitch. And I was always at the front. I was always a good runner. I was always at the front and that. But in the warm-ups, I'd be at the back. And everybody going, what's up with Dino? Really? Why is he not fucking about? Why is he not having banter? Why is he not? And I'd be going, and you know what? I wouldn't actually know what was up with me.
Mm.
And then I'd train, I'd get in the car and I'd go, oh, what's up with you? Especially later on in your life, you know, you've been arguing with a wife, blah, 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 blah. And you know what? Yeah, I could not put a fucking finger on it.
Yeah.
I could not put a finger on it. And going back to the attention thing, that's probably why I got divorced, because I was craving attention. Yeah. You know, I probably wanted my wife at the time, and then craving from other women, and that attention, and that subsequently, the one thing that really, really killed me off, really, in the sense that when my mum and dad got divorced, I was 12, my brother was 18. When I got divorced, Jordan was 12 and Josh was 18.
Oh, and that really hit you hard, didn't it?
Because I always said right from my life, if I ever get married and have children, I will never put my children for what I did, for what I did. Mm. And I did exactly the same.
But at what stage did you first like realize you really need help and reach out? Because like me, I was so embarrassed. I didn't speak to anyone. You know, my confidant was my wife, and you know, it was just this feeling of real weakness. You know, because in rugby, and I guess in football, it's probably pretty similar. A lot of players go out on the pitch injured with little niggles and little like muscle tears, and you know, damaged ligaments, and even fractured bones. That you just go out, you patch yourself up. But when it comes to mental health, it's this sort of thing. Well, listen, man up. You know, sort yourself out, lad. You'll be all right. It was that sort of, in our era anyway, wasn't it?
Well, you can't put an injection in your head, can you? You can't wrap a bandage in your head and make it go away. And like you say, I was just, my first experience was when I went to Aberdeen. I was 24. I left Hull, and obviously I got married at Josh. And I started really, really bad. I was like, after games, I was drinking a lot, you know, after a game. I never did it, never broke any rules before games. Great professional. But then when I had a beer, I was a binge drinker. The more I drank, the more I got upset. And I was peeing the bed at the age of 28, 29 through alcohol.
Jesus.
And I actually, for the first time, because my fitness coach called Stuart Hoggle was at Aberdeen. My ex-wife at the time, my wife at the time, she was a 200 meter sprinter. And she was in the Scottish 3 years. So she would run in the Scottish 3 years. I'd go and watch them on the weekend, push the pram, watch the running. And Hoggy used to coach my wife. And obviously then I think she must have said something, and then he's pulled me. And he's gone, Dean's getting angry, he's punching walls, he's peeing the bed. And he pulled me, and I just broke down. I can't remember when it was or whatever, and I just broke down, and I went, and he went, listen, I'll get you some help. And I went, don't tell anybody. I don't want lads to know. Yeah. Please don't tell anybody. And I went, and he took me himself. He went to Edinburgh. I went to Edinburgh and I saw a counsellor, a psychotherapist. Richard, I think his name, I can't remember yesterday, Kieran, but I think I can remember this lad's name. Actually. I think his name was Richard Cox, I think. He was from Edinburgh. And I poured my heart out for the first time ever. But it was like a situation where, like, when you have a drink, you know, do you drink excessively? Yes. I lied before. I only had 4 or 5 pints, you know what I mean? But, well, yeah, you can still go out for a drink because you work, you strive all week, you work all week, you train, you play, you score a goal, you're on a high or whatever, you get beat, you're on a low. But I would go out anywhere with my wife on a Saturday night, we literally. And he'd say, look, just like have three or four pints and then have a couple of glasses of water. You know, and then if you want to have another couple of pints, just don't get off your face, really. And it worked for about 6 months. I actually didn't drink Amazing. For 6 months. I felt all right, but then I was still craving that attention. Right. I was still craving something. I don't know where it was. And then I just slipped back into the slide again, in the sense of I left Aberdeen, I went to Oxford, didn't really enjoy it off the field. My wife was pregnant with my second child at the time, and it was just like training as normal, your normal day work, training, come home, play a game, get pissed up on a Saturday night. Then I started like wanting to go out the next day after the Saturday night, because I had a bit of a hangover. So I'd want the hair of the dog. And it started from there, and I just started built bosh, bosh, bosh. Then my problem started again. And then in the end, I started feeling suicidal, started thinking, you know, I'm hurting my wife because we're rowing all the time. you know, it's fair on the kids because the kids are on the young. And then it escalated from there, really. And then that was it. It just started it snowballing. The snowball got bigger and bigger and bigger.
So you got a chance. So you had the counsellor up in Edinburgh before then. Then you went back to sort of more drinking. Did you have anyone in Oxford that you could talk to? But what about a psychiatrist to help with, you know, did anyone diagnose you and say, listen, you've got depression and we need to medicate you and help you and that sort of thing? At what stage did that happen?
Yeah, Matt, well, so basically 12 years ago, for me, Kieran, it was like the icing on the cake and I'm a firm believer all good things come to an end, and I'm a firm believer that things bad happen and meant to happen, because you have to, you know, it's like a situation, how can I put it? Something's got to be bad to happen for someone to deal with it. So mine was like accumulation of things. So like, yeah, I was going through a divorce. I wasn't seeing my kids. I'd moved back to Hull. I wasn't seeing my kids. I was on the after dinner circuit, but I was working for Sky Sports with Jeff Sterling, and I was like mentally there, and it was it. And then all of a sudden, I had an argument with my dad. I was 41 year old. I was 40 when I retired. I was 41 year old when I had a row with my dad, just a stupid row. And I never spoke to him for 5 months, Kieran. And then all of a sudden, I was going through a divorce. And in that 5 months, he had an heart attack and died.
Jesus Christ.
Out the blue, really. And I got a phone call. And it fucked me up.
Yeah, that's good. That you over the edge, didn't it? Yeah.
I just thought, that's it. Right. Me done. I thought, that's it. You know, and what I was doing is, in between that, obviously going through the divorce, and we all know it's not the nicest thing in the world for anybody, not just your wife, not your kids, for yourself, for your parents, whatever. And it was a situation where I was hurting that many people. I was getting angry, you know, sort of self-destruct. Do you know what I mean? Don't know what you're going to get from me. And obviously, towards the end, the icing on the cake, obviously my dad passed away and then got divorced. Then I started drinking very heavily then. I got done drink driving. I just didn't really. And I looked in the mirror and I just thought, you know what, you're just hating people all the time, Dee. You're just hating people. So if I'm not here anymore, I can't hurt anybody.
Shocking.
I was actually with a young girl at the time, which was a big mistake. And I split up with her. I said, look, I can't be with you because, you know, you're 20, 23-year-old, 24-year-old, I'm 40. I've got a 10-year-old kid. And I sort of said, leave, and she left, and then that was it. You know, I thought, nobody will find me in the house on my own.
Jesus, Dean. Yeah.
Yeah, nobody will find me. And then obviously it was a good friend of my mum's, or a good friend of mine, mum's lived out, or just down opposite the street, and that she came in one day. Well, no, the girlfriend came in later on in the night, and she knew I was in trouble, and she found me on the kitchen floor.
Jesus Christ, how lucky. That's a mate.
Just for me, it was just like, you know, why am I hurting people? Why, you know? And like you say, if I'm not here, I can't hurt anybody.
That's massive. You're right on the edge, aren't you? And you've tried to commit suicide, and you've lost your dad, and everything's sort of like, you know, nothing's going right for you. So the sort of I'm really interested in the recovery story. I'll get to all the singing and your Twitter stuff, which I love. But just so what was the next step then for you rehabilitating yourself?
Well, it's just one of them situations where things happen for a reason. And it was obviously one of my ex-teammates, Ian Ashby, who was obviously, I was out drinking with him, and then went home, and then I went home. And then he knocked on the door, and I just broke down crying. And he just said, look, I think you need help. I think you're drinking too much. You're putting a bit of weight on. I didn't have any motivation to play golf. I didn't go to the gym. I just basically wanted to go out and drink, you know. And he said, I know Clark Carlisle, who worked for the PFA at the time. 2011 it was. And then Chris Kamara ran me up. He celebrated. Clark Carlisle told me you're having problems. I'll put you on to James West at Sporting Chance. I split up with a girl. Then my wife picked me up from Hull to take me back to Leeds. And I stayed in the house for a week, 2 weeks, or a week and a half, staying in Josh's bed. And then I always laugh about it, but I had an interview with James West on the phone. You know,
you've
been there. Out of 10,
it's a nightmare. Yeah, you're like, oh, that's not good.
I'd be honest. And then he says, look, and I just couldn't stop crying. And I just said, look, I'm a three at the minute. Yeah. I'm thinking that I've got suicide thoughts again. But the trouble is, because I was in the house and the kids were there, I was trying to put up, you know, trying to be strong. And then James said, just come in. And I went in, my mate drove me to Portsmouth in Lippock, where it was. And I went in there and he just said straight away, after about half an hour, 20 minutes, whatever, he just said, you need to come in and you need to start this process of, you know, you're not classed as an alcoholic, but you're alcohol dependent, which is making you do stupid things. I was scared. I didn't want to go in. I really didn't. And I always say now, when I've done it, it was the best 26 days of my life, because, you know, don't get me wrong, I come out and I still have them. Listen, care about what anybody says.
So with you forever, I guess, isn't it? Yeah. But I guess it must have been a bit of a relief when someone labelled it and said, you know, you've got depression, and this is how we're going to treat it. Was it a feeling of relief? I'll tell you my story in a minute. For me, it's very my story is very different, and that's why everyone who's probably listened to this and actually listens to you on Twitter and stuff, everyone's different in their own little way. Some of them will have parents divorced and struggle, and some of them will be maybe like me, where they've sort of got terrible OCD and rumination, and some people rely on alcohol. So it's great to talk to you about something that I don't understand much about. But at what stage then did they turn it around and sort of, so you started to get medicated, I guess, with counselling?
He asked me when I went in. So I went in. And I spoke to Gazza, Paul Gascoigne, and I said, I'm going in. He went, get in that back bedroom. It's the best bedroom there. Because it was a double bed, and the other three lads had to share a big bedroom. So that was my first thing. I got in my bedroom and I said to James West, and I went in. Obviously, 2 weeks before, I never had a drink. He says, look, if you smell alcohol on you when you come in, we'll turn you away. So I never had a drink for 2 weeks before I went in. I was shitting myself. And then, like you say, it was just a massive relief. The three lads all went in. It was like a lovely little family that we had, and, you know, which we all had different issues, and it become a little family. And then all of a sudden, I was sort of like becoming the sort of the dad, because I was the older one of the three lads. And it was a situation where you bounced off it. The first meeting was a weird one, because she sat in the living room. I'm like, you, why us people with mental health and depression got OCD? I fucking do not know. Because I'm obsessed with cleaning. And what happens is that, I don't know about you, but when I was in rehab, everybody sat in the same seat every day.
Right, yeah.
Everybody sat.
Yeah.
But I'm like, well, I've got fucking problems here. But he'd come in, he'd come downstairs, and we'd read a book in the morning first. So with each individual, have to read a book. And then we had tasks to do, obviously. You know, you go in the gym twice a day. So in the end, I ended up not drinking for about 75 years. I lost a stone and a half in weight. I just looked so well and that. And like you said, the relief of like sitting in a room and crying my eyes out and telling my problems was like, you know, you might as well have cut my head off, because I had so much relief.
I think that's the thing. It's about sharing. And I mean, I was very lucky. I I mean, I went to see, I was with a psychologist because I was ruminating about the games I was playing and I was thinking, overthinking everything. And I got in touch with a psychologist and started chatting. After about four sessions, she said, I don't think you need to see a psychologist. I think you need to see a psychiatrist. And I was going, well, what do you mean? He said, oh, are you getting all this anxiety like before games and after games, and you're getting these rushes of adrenaline and you're getting these scattering thoughts and you're trying to control them. And I think what you might need is medication. And I was like, what? Yeah, I think you need medication. Within 6 months, I'd seen a psychiatrist. Within another few months, I was taking stuff. And it took me about 2 years to have no more anxiety. And then OCD was still there, and it took years to get rid of. But I know what you mean. I didn't necessarily go to alcohol. I didn't have those suicidal thoughts. I had this horrific sort of OCD constant anxiety, which was really hard to deal with. But I guess I don't understand your story in the sense that I don't know what it's like to have those dark thoughts all the time. But I guess everyone's different. And that's why I love your story, because, you know, I love you talking about, you know, making the bed and putting the pillow at the end of the bed and just starting the day off really well. And the fact that, you know, not everyone is like you and I and a sportsman, but the fact that you've hit on something really important with the walking is most people, apart from disabled people, most people can go for a walk. And it's the most simple thing. Now, talk to me about how you came up with this and the why, and why you think it's so important, because I just absolutely love it.
I think it was Matt Crosley, my ex-teammate, right. And he just says, I'm watching, I've just seen your videos and that. And then he was obviously having a few problems, and I bounced off him. I said, look, talk to me if you need help, you know what I mean? Don't bottle it up. And, obviously, the bed med pillars on top, it was a situation where I'd sorted my head out. And I thought, I want to make a difference now. I want to make a difference. I want to, you know, I've never been a big time Charlie. I get recognized wherever you go, probably the same. And that's just how life I'm
not anymore for me, mate. Not anymore for me. They can recognize you, but not anymore for me.
Well, it's just one of them situations where you go in the local pub, you go in the shop. Everybody knows who you are, and this and then what sparked my flame really was obviously Binnie Jones when he lost Tanya and lost his wife, and he come on GNTV, and I'm boring myself at the same story, but he assessed him and says, how are you coping, how are you doing, how are you getting on, you know? And he said, it's tough, obviously very tough, you know, and you know, losing a parent, but losing your wife, as you know, as well, it must be so hard. And Pierce just said, how do you start your day? How? And he says to me, you know what I do? I get out of bed and I make my bed. He didn't say pillars on top. I'd gone back in that fucking bad place again. I was getting a lot of anxiety. I was getting panic attacks. I was scared to go to bed because I didn't want to, you know, if I laid down and I'm overthinking, I start, you know, it's like, I can't breathe. I've got to get out. I'll be getting up at 4 a.m. walking around the garden, trying to breathe, and it's horrible. And then the penny just dropped. I think, I don't know. I just thought, the reason why I'm feeling like this is full alcohol.
Yeah.
You know, I'm drinking too much again. So all of it, but I was on my own then. I was single. So like, it's what you do. Fucking go to the pub. You know, my dad said to me, you know, when you go in pub, you know, it's like a change room, isn't it? Yeah. I go, yeah. Because I don't like being on my own. I like being around people. And yeah, you're drinking and you're having a beer, you're having a laugh, all your problems go out the window for 2 or 3 hours. You know, you're getting pissed up, you're having a laugh. But then next morning you're thinking, God, I'm back to square one again here. Shit, what I'll do is I'll go back on the piss again. Because it's going to go away. And all of a sudden, it was just like a roundabout. Get off that fucking roundabout. And then when Vinny said that, I went, right, that's it. I got out of bed because I would lay in bed till half 10, 11 o'clock. My mate's pub, my mate who had his own pub. I could have gone in there at 9 o'clock if I wanted to knock on the door. And I'd ring him and say, on my way, walking down. So I'd get up at 11:30, get a shower, be out for 12, be in pub for 12:30, walk down, because I couldn't drive. I'd been done doing driving. And it was just an escape. And then all of a sudden, like, I said to my mate, I said, I need some help here. He says, come and live with me. Come and live with me. And then, and then Vinny said that. I woke up one morning, I made my bed, I put my pillows on top, and I just posted one video. And I remember it the first day I did it. And I've gone, right, this is the start of, this is the first day of my new life. And I just put, right, and I cried or whatever it was. And I said, look, the first thing you've got to do is you've got to get out of bed. You've got to make your bed. You've got to put your pillows on top. I says, because the moral of the story is you can't make your bed if you're laid in it.
Yeah.
You've got to get out of it. And to get out of it, that's when you're starting your day. Instead of laid in, thinking, shit, blah, blah, blah. And I think I got about 60,000 views of it on the first one. And I was like, oh my God. And then I did another one. And then they're going, Dean, and it was just like messages coming in. You've helped me today. But the moral of the story is, I've been doing it, like, I think, a year now. I didn't know it'd end up like this. I didn't. And it wasn't an attention thing. It was me thinking, right, I've got my head right. And then I met a new girl who I live with now. So all things started. And I thought to myself, the better things you do in life, the more opportunities you get. Mm. So then work started to come back in again. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? You started getting, people didn't look at you as the Dino being to rehab and drinking and like that. They looked at you like, God, he's turned his life around. And then, my videos went, listen, I want you to, me, it's not me. Yeah, I'm talking to you, but the trouble is I'm talking to you like you are now talking to me. I'm telling you my experiences. No, please don't shut off. Please don't, like what you did. Please don't.
But I think the powerful thing about it, though, Dean, really, is that because, you know, let's say call it fans and the public, when they see someone like you, is they look at you and us as gladiators who are untouchable, right? And so as soon as someone famous or someone like yourself who's sort of played, been at the top of his game, adored by their fans, you know, that they're untouchable and it doesn't happen to them. Well, actually it does. And therefore the sort of the normal, when I say normal bloke, the non-famous, the postman or the milkman or whatever thinks, this only happens to people like me. Well, no, it happens to, it doesn't matter how rich, how famous, how poor, how whatever you are, this happens every day to lots of people. And the fact, I think, because you've sort of done something quite different and you're kind of like getting people to do little things. And I love what some of your videos, they're very different. Like, just get out of bed. I know you might not do what I'm doing, the 5K or 7K or 10K or whatever, but I was up at 5 and I'm walking and start. Look, just love the world. Just do a little short walk. Just take those little steps. And I kind of think, though, that's more powerful than you really think, because other people think, no, this doesn't happen to wealthy people. This doesn't happen to famous people.
But the trouble is, I don't, you say like that, I was like you saying, I'm actually thinking like, are you taking the piss? Am I really making a difference? Am I just, because I've just sang this morning in the car, have I made a difference? And it's just like, because I'm just a normal guy and yeah, you are in the public eye and yeah, you get that, oh yeah. But you see, well, Mark Crosley, when he said to me, God, I've seen your video on that, he says, I'm down a bit, I'm going to go for a walk. And I went, right, okay. I never said go for a walk. I said, get out of bed and make your bed.
Yeah.
And then I said, if you've got any problems, please tell somebody. Yeah. Don't silence, because if you're helping one person, no, you're saving one person's life and you're doing something right. And then Mark Crosley started walking and he said, you know what, Dean, I feel great. I feel great now I've been walking, I've cleared my head. And I always train anyway, so the exercise for me. Yeah,
me too. Exercise is so important. Amazing. Wow. Switch off.
So, and Norm, Matt Crosley, he says, shall we set this charity up? I went, what do you mean? He went, we'll set this charity up, like, and like, and I says, what we're going to call it? And he went, walking and talking.
That's it.
And he put charity hikes. And I'm like, what do you mean? He says, we'll set it up and we'll try walking Kilimanjaro. So I went, wow.
Right.
And then all the, Mark started doing his walking's brilliant. Oh, walking's brilliant, blah, blah, walking, talking. Then he mentioned me and then I mentioned him and saying, look, he inspired me because I said, well, like you say, if you can't go for a run or you're in a wheelchair or whatever, or, you know, just get out, just get a bit of fresh air. It doesn't cost anything. If you've got no money or whatever, you don't have to have a gym membership. It doesn't cost money to go for a run on the roads. And it escalated from there. And obviously, then I started doing them. Obviously, Mark started saying it, and then we got it together, and then we realised how many ex-players we would play against, got in touch with us, and says, I'm in trouble. I need... So then we've got me, Mark Crossley, Chris Kirkland, Steve Howie, John Beresford, John Parkin, Nigel Jemson. So you had all these ex-pros saying I'm struggling. Wow. I'm fucking wow. And I've gone, amazing. What? And they've gone, please don't stop your videos. I'm going, what are you on about? Please don't stop your videos. I'm like, right, okay. And then that's when I started to realise, do you know what? This is working for a lot of people. But more importantly, it's working for me.
That's good.
Because I'm saying a video, and I know that I've got 90,000 followers on Twitter and whatever on Facebook. I don't do Facebook. I just put the videos on there because my mum does Facebook. So, and I thought, I'm actually talking to 90,000, maybe more, on Facebook every day. And they're going, like, if I don't want to have seven, somebody direct messages me and goes, Dean, are you all right?
I'd love to know what are those messages like? Because, I mean, I think, what are they like? Do you get people who are really struggling, or do you get people are like, is a lot of it thankful? You must get a couple of haters and you just go, or whatever, jog on. No haters.
I'm very, listen, you know, we know what social media is like in sport now. With racism and things like that and all that. Maybe you get one or two, maybe not even that. In the year and a half, hearing that, I've actually been so lucky, you know, that people actually go, do you know what? I scored the most famous goal in my life against Bristol City, and I've had Bristol City fans going, I fucking hated you, but I love you.
Oh, I love that.
I had one today saying my girlfriend spilled. Listen, I always say I'm not a doctor, I'm not a counsellor. I don't, you know, I'm just trying to give my experience on a video. Now, I'm too honest, mate. That's my problem. And if I feel down, if I feel a 6 out of 10 or a 5 out of 10 or a 9 out of 10, I'll actually say it. If I want to cry or feel as though I want to cry, I'll just let it out.
Great.
Because I've got like, oh mate, it's fucking. I've snots come out my nose in front of 90,000 people. I've never thought in my life. But then it just, like you just said there, because of you, who you are, and like you say, it's nothing to do with money. It's nothing to do with fame.
No.
We're all, you know, we all started the same and we all finished the same. Yeah. Billy Jones inspired me.
I love that story. So what would you say? There's a lot of people going to listen to this who might be struggling, like, and what would your advice be to, you know, a young lad now who's, you know, would have been in your shoes, whether he's a postman or whether he's a famous footballer or a factory worker, whatever, like, what would you say to that person who's struggling? For whatever, like me, it could be really bad OCD anxiety, or could be really depressive thoughts, suicidal. Like, what would your advice to them be?
I think it's very difficult to give somebody advice to say, right, it's easy to do that. It's easy to say that I'm having a problem, because it's easy for us because we've done it.
Of course.
it's not as easy for next door neighbour or whatever, you know, and say, come on, it's easy if you just speak out. Yeah. But you don't know people's personalities. Oh, me and you have got to do, and the bit I did with Tyson Fury in the gap. Like Tyson Fury, you know, probably the most wealthiest sportsman going. And the problems he had, and I had the privilege to do an interview with him, and it was just so Vinny inspired me, and even he more inspired me. I thought, you know, I'm cannon fodder to these two boys, and at the end of the day, yeah, you're in the public eye, and people. But the trouble is, like, you've got, for me, I say to people that, we've been there. It's a fucking weakness. If do you know what I used to say? And I don't know about your parents. My dad was a fisherman, and he was an hard man. It was a weakness to cry when I was a kid.
Yeah, we wouldn't cry. We didn't cry. I didn't see it. Show ourselves crying.
Right. You played rugby as a kid. You got hurt. Don't let them know that you've been hurt. It's old school. Yeah. Old school. So, you know, if you had a fight in the street and you got beat, you come in, you bray you again. Go out and fight him. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it was a weakness to cry when you was a kid. So I found that very hard because I thought, God, I'm weak. If I'm crying, or if I tell somebody I'm upset, it's weakness. It's a weakness. And in the end, I actually found it therapeutic to actually cry in front of somebody. But do you know what? I'm having a fucking bad day today. But I don't go for a drink and have a bad day because it just escalates. Alcohol's a depressant. And I've never took antidepressants. I've never took drugs in my life. And then all of a sudden, you just ask me the question. If somebody said to you, I would hope that somebody, like I do after dinner speak, I've been doing it 7.5 years now, and I've had bigger men than me and you coming up to me, you know, and you think to yourself, God, is he coming over to give us a good hand in here, or is he coming to shake my hand? And I've had big men coming up to me going, I'm in trouble here, but you've inspired me to come out and say something.
That's brilliant. That's amazing. And,
wow. What? Wow. So for me, it's very difficult to go up to them. I'd never go up to anybody and go, are you okay? If one of my mates, if I knew somebody really well, and I'd go, and you sense it, don't you? Like Ian Ashby sensed it with me. I'd go up to somebody and go, look, I'm here if you want to talk. If you don't talk, that's fine. But don't keep it in yourself. Just let it out. Just let it come out. And as you say, I think once you've got on that first step, once you've got on that and accepted for yourself that you've done wrong, whatever you've done wrong in your life, if you've accepted that, then you can move forward. But if you're denying it, you know, I've just had one of my friends, I won't mention any names, and he's in really bad trouble now, and he's not accepted that he's an alcoholic.
Right.
He's not accepted. And if you don't accept it, you're not going to rectify it. So, like there, when you're hurting people, stop hurting people. Stop hurting people. You know, when you're drunk, stop getting angry. So don't get drunk.
Of course there is. Of course there is. And listen.
Like, people have problems. People have problems. Everybody has problems in the world. One, divorce. Two, death. Three, splitting up with somebody.
Losing a job.
You know. Losing any. So when somebody has a self-destruct button, something goes off. Something has gone wrong. You don't just go off your fucking tits, do you? You don't go. So the situation where now I look at it now, and I'm so honest with myself. I don't lie to anybody now. I don't lie to myself.
And that's why. And that comes across because when you're either crying or you're laughing and you're walking. God, what some of those walks are early, man. They're early. Some of them walks. Jesus, like, the sun's just coming out. It's like. And that did inspire me because my wife loves to walk and we do a lot of walking. I think everyone's different, like you say, but the talking's so important, whether it be a therapist, whether it be your GP, whether it be your best mate, your wife, you know, just talking it's a problem halved, isn't it? And it really is. And I do think, you know, we need people like you to sort of keep being brave and keep singing in the morning and cheering us up, even though it was shocking. Uh, But my Wednesday morning was cheered up. I knew I was interviewing. I thought, oh, let me just see what his last few tweets. And I'm just sitting there laughing. I'm like, oh, he's a legend. He's an absolute legend. But listen, I think I've taken up almost an hour of your time. It's been fascinating. It's been fascinating. I've been on tablets for 19 years and I feel very weak and I still feel embarrassed. And I love it when someone like you comes out who's just not embarrassed anymore. In a way, they just don't care what people think, if that makes sense. I don't, whether your singing's good or not, or well, you don't care. You want to help people, you know, and people listening, hopefully will listen to this, who are struggling, will reach out to other people and get help and follow you on Twitter.
It's a situation, you know, like that. It's like, you know, everybody, you know what it's, Kieran? Everybody has an opinion, but, you know, because who you are, and that's the one thing, the hardest thing, I think, for us is because who you are, you know, everything that you say, people take it to heart. Mm. Do you know what I mean? It's an opinion. I've got an opinion like you. Everybody has an opinion. Do you know, it's like, you know, somebody slagged me off the other day, was it something? I can't remember what it was, something. The CBD oil that I've been taking.
Oh yeah,
you know that what Anthony Fowler put me on, and it's the best week's sleep I've had with this oil that I've been taking. Because I still sleep on the night, and when I struggle to sleep, I toss and turn and get a bit anxious and I start thinking. But I've took this CBD oil. And this last week, it's just, I've had the best night's sleep ever. And then somebody like tweeted going,
stop.
Oh, why don't drugs work for you or something? Do you know what I mean? And I'm trying to do is put this product out. If you click on the link, if you click Windus as a password, Anthony Fowler's got, if you say to your mate or your followers, because they're earning money out of it or whatever, and if they click on Windows, they get 30% off. That's all I'm trying to do.
Exactly.
If you want to take it. If you don't, I don't care. But if you click on Windows, you get 30% off. And I go, right. And they sent me some products and it's worked.
Brilliant.
Worked for me.
Exactly. People, if they're not interested, they can just not bother.
It's not a difference to me. Right, I have problems. But then you always get one word, you know what I mean? But like I said, I've been very lucky, and I've had, as you say, I feel as though I know not so much Facebook, because I don't look sort of look into Facebook, but whoever I've followers on Facebook and 90,000 followers on Twitter, I class them, even though I don't know them, I class them as my friend, because they're giving me the feedback going, do you know what, Dean, you've helped me. I've gone out for a walk this morning, I've made my bed, I've put my pillows on top. And then even wives, girls, ladies, whatever, have come on and gone, you know, you've got me out of bed. You know, and it's just a situation, not just, I know it's high class of men, male suicide. And I always say when I do my afternoon speech, I always finish off with a motivational one, 2 or 3 minutes of it, by saying, look, you know, if you're afraid to tell your wife, you know, tell somebody else's wife. Because I always think that women are better listeners than what we are. Do you know what I mean? And I say to a wife, if you can't tell your husband, tell somebody else's husband, or tell somebody who you can rely on. They might want to keep it quiet. They might, you know, somebody's wife might want me and go, do you know what? I'm going for a bad time here. And this, but please don't say out. I won't say a word. But at least they've got a little bit off the chest. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's the more important thing.
It's to talk. And I love the fact that charity's got talking in it and walking in it and exercising. But yeah, listen, you're fascinating to talk.
Listen, you'll have to, if you want, I'll get you on it. You'll have to come on the Kilimanjaro.
What do you do then? How do you do it?
I'll sort it out. If you just
have we got a walk? Have I got a walk like in my pastime, Kilimanjaro?
You've got to walk with us, all those ex-players, all those ex-pros.
At a certain point, certain day, or is it like you've got to do it?
Well, it was supposed to be this year, but what we're doing is we're doing, is it Adrian's Wall?
Oh, yeah, Adrian's Wall, yeah.
So we're doing that this year. So if you want to get on board with us all, it's everything paid for, everything's done for you. All the hotels are paid for. A bit of banter with all the lads. I'll speak to Mark.
Okay. When are you doing? Do you know when you're doing it?
I can't remember the date. I know it's this year, though, because obviously next year is going to be Kilimanjaro. So we've got all the funding. We've got Sky Sports. They give us 15 grand. Obviously, the walking's brilliant. We've got, like, obviously, with the charity, we've got loads of fundraising coming in. So it's just like ex-players, comedians on the circuit.
Brilliant.
We've got a camera going up Kilimanjaro. We've got all this Adrian's Wall coming up. Good banter, good having a walk. But what we're doing in this, the first walk we're doing, staying in a hotel, getting up next day, doing another whatever walk. But Matt Crosley and a few of the lads from Walking is brilliant. They're organising it.
Send it through. Send it That'd to Sue. Great. Give me the date. Let me know the date. I'd love to do something like that with you lot. It'd be great. And, you'll have to excuse any rugby stories.
No, don't worry about it. I love the rugby. It's fine. So I don't know. I will stop recording now because I'll give you.
All right, yeah. Matt and Callum, are they still there? Hello, Callum. That's right. I'll phone your number now, so you've got mine. Go on. What's your number?
Yeah, 07780 644 644.
That's an easy one. I'm phoning you now. Got
it. Right, I got it.
Yeah, phone me. Give me the date. So I'd love to do something like that. I'd love that.
Right, I'll get the dates. I'll give Matt Crosley your number as well and let him give you a call. He'll give you all the information. And the more
how many days is it walking?
It's 5 days.
Right.
But in the hotel. So I'll get you on this one. We'll get you on the first one. It'll be good for your mental health as well. And it's just as you say, we'll just have a bit of banter with it, have a crack, whatever. We'll do it back for 5 years and then we'll take it from there.
Brilliant stuff, mate. Love. Listen, right, fascinating chat. Loved it. Really loved it. And keep everyone entertained. All right. All right. Cheers, my man.
Rocket with Nick Easter.
Thank you for listening to Rocket. Stay tuned for more interviews with some of the UK's biggest sports stars. Regards, mental health.